Okay, we will call the regular meeting of the Los Osos Community Services District Board of Directors for Thursday, August 3rd, 2023. To order, would you join me for the flag salute, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice.
Could we have a roll call, please? Laura's online, I guess, with this, I assume.
Yeah. Director Forcroy.
I'm here.
Director Gatchel.
Here.
Director Womack.
Present.
Vice President Ohilski.
Present.
President Sesenya.
I'm here. And so with that, we will move on to agenda item 2, the announcement of closed session items, public employment under government code 54957, subsection B, subsection 1, the general manager contract review. This is an annual review that we do every year.
Yes. And so basically, you're going to discuss the format of it tonight, and we will have a closed session at the next meeting for the actual review.
Oh, okay. Okay. Tonight we'll be going over the format, right? And then do the actual review next week. The heavy lifting.
Yes.
Next month.
Next month.
Thank you.
And we do need to take public comment on this before you go to closed session.
Is there any public comment on agenda item 2, the general manager's contract review?
Please come up to the podium if you'd like to make public comment, and there is no public comment online.
Okay, none here in the room. With that, we'll adjourn to closed session and be back at 6 o'clock. Of the Los Osos Community Services District Board of Directors for Thursday, August 3rd, 2023 to order. There is no reportable action out of the closed session at 5:30. We went over, as we mentioned before the meeting, we went over the review process for the general manager's contract, and we'll announce the results next month. So with that, we'll go on to agenda item 3, public comment. Wait a minute. Excuse me. That's closed session. We're general action items. 7A, the water shortage contingency plan review and recommended revisions. This has been a couple years in the making, and thank you, Ron.
Yeah, we did take this to the Utility Advisory Committee, and I told them it's been on my whiteboard for quite a few years here, so we're finally getting around to it. Now that we've had a banner of rainy year, it's actually better to talk about it while we're not in an emergency. So a little bit of background. Our current water shortage contingency plan was developed back in 2013. That went through the UAC process. It was actually Rob Miller and myself developed that with the help of the UAC and then with the board, which adopted it back in September 2014. And I'll show you some rainfall stats from that period here in just a minute. But because of the drought we were in at that point, the board approved moving immediately to stage 3, or almost immediately to stage 3 of the plan. And that's where we've been since 2015. We did have some rainfall shortly after the adoption, actually two pretty good back-to-back years of rainfall. And we hadn't really developed strategies on how to get out of a stage. So in 2017-18, the board adopted an exiting strategy for each stage. And basically it requires two consecutive years of normal or above rainfall to exit. And like I said, we've been in stage 3 since 2015. And in the penalty phases in stage 3, there are potential financial penalties associated with that. But we did do a modification back then because it is suggested in the plan, so that we haven't implemented those through all these years. So here's the rainfall stats. I know this is a little bit small, but it is in the board report. You can see going back as far as 2012, 2013, we had quite a few years of below average rainfall. And so as you can see, I put the red arrow where the plan was adopted. And then we had back to back, you know, fairly good years, 17.72 inches, 26 inches, but we didn't adopt the exiting.
What was average?
17, I'm sorry. 17 inches is in the plan as average.
Otherwise, I didn't have
an idea. Very good question.
Question too.
I'm sorry. I just assume these things. Yeah. Correct. So you can see we are just a little over in 1 year and then quite a bit over in that next. But since the board hadn't adopted the exiting criteria yet, we remained in stage three. And as you can see, through 17, 18, 18, 19, kind of bounced around, and then we hit the next, you know, multi-year drought. So then over in the comments, I was indicating that we didn't hit that two consecutive years of average or above. So that's where we didn't meet the criteria to move out of stage three. And we'll come back to this in just a moment. So we're going to get into the recommendations that I'm proposing that we change for the Water Shortage Contingency Plan. The first one are the targets. What we did, staff did, we looked at what we had back in 2013-14 and then looked at where we are today. And if you look at on the monitor on the left hand is the current targets in gallons per person per day. And then on the left are what I'm proposing. So we went from a base of 64 gallons per capita down to 61, not a big change. Our community has been doing very well for quite a while on water conservation. And so, as you can see, I just proportionately stepped them down until we got to stage four and five, where I actually took it down quite a bit more because I believe the community could, under the circumstances, if we were actually in a stage five, we could hit that 31 gallons per capita. And as you'll see in my proposal for entering and exiting, it'll be much harder to get down to a stage five, which means we'll be in probably a more severe water condition than what we're in currently, or the way it's set up currently for entering and exiting. So that's one of my first recommendations. The next one, we'll get into this. This is where what's been bothering me for the last few years about how we go in and out of the stages. As I said, it has to be back-to-back average or above. And so as you could see, there's a year where we had, you know, 13 inches, and then a year we had 26 inches. But because we hadn't hit in that table before, because we hadn't hit those back-to-back years, we just continue to kind of move along in stage three, which really kind of lost its meaning. You know, what are we, you know, really trying to achieve? Because we didn't get into the prohibitions as much because of where the community was at in water use. So what I'm going to, you know, and then for the entering stages, and I'm going to show you another table here in just a moment. I want to add, because when we developed this plan, the Basin Management Committee hadn't formed yet, and we had no monitoring data. Well, in 2015, once the BMC formed and we've been doing annual monitoring reports, there's a great water level metric in the annual reports that really indicates how our levels are doing based on conditions, actual conditions in the basin. And I'll show you here in a minute what that looks like. And I'd like to add that in as one of the criteria. It could be either the climatic condition going in, which is, again, it's a little complicated, but we can keep that climatic condition, or if the BMC spring water level metric remains the same from the previous year, whatever stage will not be declared. And again, this will make a lot of more sense in just a second here. But there are water quality triggers that I want to keep, because those are actually very definable and I think provide a good action level. So we'll keep the water quality triggers. And as far as the exiting strategy, I want to add the word equivalent. So if you could put 2 years of rainfall together and it hit that trigger amount, that we could leave. But I also want to put in, or two consecutive, or the BMC spring water level metric increases. And now the USC actually said, well, why don't we just get rid of the climatic triggers and just use the water level metric? I just want to see how it goes. I'd rather us, you know, keep both triggers, because it's all dependent on what the board decides. I will be bringing you annual water reports from now on that will look at this, and we can make decisions as a board, because the plan is a guide, and it's really, I think we need to look at the circumstances we're in before we start making changes and impact the community. So with that, I wanted to show this graph. Now the blue line, this is something that's in the annual report, BMC annual report. The red line is the chloride metric, which has been coming down now for several years. It did just a slight bump this last spring, but I want you to look at the blue line and look at how that's been coming up. And interesting enough, it's really hard to see, but right where it's about 2010, 2012 is when it started coming up. And that was during that drought period I showed you, where we had really severe drought and low rainfall years. So the basin is rebounding. And so this kind of contradicts how our climatic triggers are set up. And I have to say, when Rob and I set up the climatic triggers, it was really not based on any scientific, you know, data. It was the best we could do, because typically, or, you know, coastal basins like ours, you know, if there's an overdraft, water levels don't drop. You just get seawater behind it. If you're inland and you see your water levels dropping, you can say, oh yeah, this is a problem. We can do those kind of triggers. So, you know, the combination of the water quality and the water level metric, I think are good metrics to start incorporating into our plan and really see how they go.
Do you have an opinion on why that might have happened?
Well, I think it's a lot of it is the decrease in groundwater pumping. Our community's using, you know, almost half of what it used to. And so, just the production reduction is a significant part of that. But then if you look at the very end of that blue line, that big jump, that's quite a bit. And that's just from one big rain year. It's a little over 2 feet rise, which we haven't seen. And I don't even know if we have, if looking back there, maybe in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it shows how our basin can and will respond.
But it also shows the chlorides kind of sitting in the same area for many years now, right?
But the thing is with chlorides, it's not as instantaneous. You're not going to see a correlation exactly with rainfall and chloride. It's a slower response to the rain. What will be interesting to see what next year's data looks like after this year. Because according to Cleith Harris, geologist, Spencer Harris, you know, there isn't an absolute correlation year to year on that. The other thing is we have a okay chloride monitoring network, but we're improving it now, and we should have better data coming in. We have one well in that network over on Rosina that really isn't a great monitoring well. It's a production well. It has borehole leakage and other issues. So I'm not as confident in the chloride data that we get as we do in the water level metrics.
Well, can you rectify what you were just saying about coastal water basins? Water levels don't drop, but the chlorides would increase when you're overdrafted?
Well, as we've seen with our seawater intrusion, and if you look back at that, where chloride started going up, our productions was way up. And so that's when we started seeing those fingers of seawater intrusion coming in as far as the library community center area. And then we still have this persistent problem out on Pasadena Drive that we're not quite sure we're at. BMC is going to actually analyze that this year to get a better understanding of what's going on with that well. But you have to understand the water level metric is based on the freshwater storage capacity, not just the rise and fall of the wells.
Okay, but we're talking about looking at just the water level, not chloride metric, in our entering and exiting strategies.
Yes, at this point.
Okay.
I guess I worry if we downgraded a notch, that maybe people will take that as a green light to not conserve. And I think conserving has been healthy for our basin.
You know, we will always be in like I would call a stage one, meaning we'll always have the message out there. But what we're seeing is the dramatic shift. It primarily has been caused with the retrofit of the prohibition zone during sewer project. I wouldn't say all of it, but a lot of it. And then our water rates have impacted it as well. So there's other factors that, you know, I don't see the community going back. If you look at the water use in our service area, but community wide, it has stayed relatively stable and slightly going down each year for at least the last 3 to 4 years. So it's not a signal. I think, and you need to understand, we'll be making the decisions at that on a year to year basis. It's not going to be all of a sudden we're out of this, but I think we need to be realistic, because like I said, we say we're in stage three, but we're not really doing stage three.
And we didn't even have a mechanism to exit a stage, to step back from three to two. Right. So we had to have something built into the plan to handle that eventuality. And I just think that the more accurate and honest we can be, the more realistic with people, then the more seriously they'll take when we do say that we're in a stage three, four, something more serious.
Right. Well, we have implemented parts of stage three. I mean, we have not issued intent to serve letters, right?
That's about it.
And that's probably the real thing on the table, honestly, is that piece of it, right?
Yes and no, but we've been under the condition six of the wastewater coastal commission condition of really the only development that's happened in the community has been outside the prohibition zone. And again, you know, intent to serve letters are at the discretion of the board.
I mean, Golden State's issuing them, and they're in the same basin, so.
Right. And their water use continues to be going down.
So if we were to ratchet down to state from three to two, then the will serves could potentially come back?
Potentially. There's a lot of hurdles to get over before that, and we'll talk about that more in the next presentation.
Okay.
Again, if you look at any plan is guidance, unless it's codified where it says shall, and our plan is may do this, may do that. And so it's really what the board decides. You know, I can bring forward recommendations, but ultimately it's what the board feels is in order for the community. I think where Chuck was going, you know, we've been in stage three. I don't know anybody or very many people that would say, oh yeah, we're in stage three, if you went out and asked them. It's just been the general conservation message. And then again, the retrofitting that we've achieved.
I think I'd like to clarify one thing. When we hear that Golden State is approving intent to serve or will serve letters, that is outside the prohibition zone and with the Title 19 retrofits involved?
Well, it's tricky because it is the Title 19. I'm just thinking there are areas that in their service area that aren't under the coastal jurisdiction that
right.
I think are in the prohibition zone.
But not in the coast, not in prohibition zone, but okay. That's true. Their territory kind of expands to the east there, and I don't,
right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else from the,
just out of curiosity, is it worthwhile to do any like biannual measurements like after rainy season and before?
Well, we do, the BMC does fall and spring.
Okay. Do we see big measurement jumps on those?
Well, you do see differences, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, what is it big? Not necessarily. And so typically they take a composite of the two.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and when we decided on the BMC to go to semi-annual reports rather than annual. That was just so we could see what was happening over the year, because we had no idea if it was all going down in the summer or the fall or when it was happening. So having this information, I think, has been very helpful. Not that I'm on the BMC anymore, but Chuck is, but it's been very, very helpful to see what is going on from a month by month basis or a season by season basis.
So this is, it's probably a little difficult to understand, but I'll try to explain it. What I've tried to do here is add in, you know, where the actions took place, and then using the current criteria, or the suggested criteria, where we might be, because down in 2013, 14, and 15 is when it was decided that they, you know, in 15 we'd go, 2015 we'd go to stage three, where actually we should have been in a stage five, according to the cumulative total there. It's kind of hard to see in there, but it is in your board report, where it should have been after 2 years, 17 inches, and we're at what, about 13 something. So we should have been in stage five. But I remember at that point, we didn't want to go from zero to five.
That's right.
You know, and so we settled on a stage three at that point in time. So then as you go out and you look at the 2 year, you know, three would have been appropriate in year two. In year three, we should have probably actually gone to a stage four following the plan. And that's that kind of purplish one up on the screen there, that 31.9. In year four, it would have been a stage three. But then after that, when we started getting a couple of good years of rain, is when, if you looked at the cumulative over that 5 year period, we should have been pretty much out of any stage.
How are you deciding when to use a 2 year rolling average, 3 year rolling average, or five?
Well, it didn't that really matter because it was two consecutive years.
Yeah.
But it, see, those were like the entering. Okay. If you had the entering, you'd kind of look at the average. So, you know, if you had 3 years and maybe, anyway, that's where the whole climatic part was very confusing. And it was very like unscientific. It was the best thing Rob and I could do. Soquel Creek.
The numbers themselves don't, I mean, you have to put a number.
Yeah.
I guess what I don't get is if you're looking at 2 year averages, 3 year averages, 4 year averages, or 5 year averages, or all of those averages, and any of those could trigger this. That's
right.
What I don't understand.
Right. I mean, because it was just getting, if I tried to do, what I was trying to show here is if you're using a cumulative instead of just 2 years.
The 5 year cumulative.
Yeah. But you know, this was like, if this was building off, moving up 5 years, if you're using the 5 years, I mean, I could have gone back and probably filled in the other squares.
I mean, we could have looked at 5 years in 2014 too, or 2013, right?
No, because we didn't really have criteria until 2017.
Got it. Okay. So that's what we're looking.
Yeah. That was kind of the trigger there, is when we actually had that criteria starting. And so this is where, you know, again, we could have had over in that stage where I put none, we probably could have had none based on the cumulative. And then where we had those 13 inch rains, we could have gone back to a two or a three based on those years, or a none, because the water level metric, again, if you look back at the water level metric, it's just been going up. And that's where great. That check and balance, you know, water level metrics, actual data. These cumulative numbers are theory, and that we've been using as a guideline to help us.
Did you by chance look at what that would have looked like, what this would look like if we had been using the BMC data?
Well, it would have been... we'd been just going up. So we would have been.
So we would have been in none.
Well, that's where, if you look on that stage over there, it would have been none, none, none or a two. It depends if you wanted to use the climatic trigger or if you wanted to use the water level metric. And that is, again, that 21-22, same scenario.
Yeah.
And then, of course, with this bumper banner year of rain, it would have been none. Any other question before we move on? This is probably the hardest one. The other ones are pretty straightforward. Okay, the prohibitions. There's a few that we would like to eliminate. One is water main flushing shall only occur in emergency situations as declared by the GM. Now, you know, that's something I think we as staff would make that call. I don't think it needs to be in as a prohibition in the plan. That's an operational issue. I guess it'd be okay just to show that we would be doing our part. But this is more a health and safety when we decide if we need to flush, we need to flush, that kind of thing.
And so, then how often do you do that? Is that like an occasional thing anyway?
It's a very occasional thing. We do some more frequent dead end flushings. That means where there isn't a loop and the water just sits, we do, but that's a health issue.
But even that water goes to water trees.
It goes to water trees.
So yeah, it's not going to waste.
Right. And this is a weird one. I was trying to remember where it came from, but no allocation may be transferred to another property. I think this might have been during the Title 19, the offset. I don't know where it came from. I every time I think I remember, I don't. But anyway, that means it should go. If it ever comes back up again, we'll deal with it. And then finally, an exemption. There's an exemption for irrigation restrictions for community recreational facilities. And I think we should have the ability to control irrigation over, you know, just other potable uses. And this would mainly apply to the schools. But the good news about the schools is they are moving towards recycled water. So that wouldn't be an issue anymore. It may, and even the community parks moving towards it. So anyway, I think this is still something that if we were in stage 4 or 5, we would want to be able to limit irrigation at recreational facilities. And those, I think, were the only ones. Yeah. Whoops. Sorry. There. Those are the only prohibitions I wanted to take out of the plan. There was one more I didn't put up here. It's the even odd watering days that we have. Sorry, I missed that one on the slide. That one, it's supposed to be in stage 3, 4, and 5. And we just don't have the resources, one. And you know, when this was created, that was kind of a best practice at the time. But since then, a lot of agencies have water data that show it doesn't work. And so you're trying to do an enforcement thing that really doesn't work. So that's the other one.
And it seems like the overall usage is the more important.
Yes.
You know, if you keep your usage down to however many gallons per person,
right?
Well, who cares when?
Exactly. So that's the other thing. You know, the dawn to dusk, that's fine. But, you know, odd, even.
Well, yeah. Days. I mean, I guess when there's less evaporation, when is that? That is good. But which day?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So that would be the other one I'd want to eliminate. That's in the report.
Well, I have a couple other questions.
Okay.
Because I know, like, in the plan as it sits, we have water quality metrics.
Mm-hmm.
For stage 3, there's a chloride trigger at 150 milligrams per liter. Right. I mean, are we saying that we're going to leave that?
We'll leave it. I think the water quality metrics are good because it's something that's measurable, and we have a maximum contaminant level that is state standard as well.
Okay, so then we're gonna have the climactic trigger, the chloride trigger,
or
TDS trigger,
right?
And
the climatic and the water level are or.
Okay.
That and but the water quality one is an and. Because that, I believe, is the way if we're seeing increased chlorides, let's say an 8th Street well, that's one of the wells that we've identified. That's a real situation.
So if stage three says 150 milligrams per liter, could you go back to the slide with our chloride levels, please? So is that telling us that we're well above that 150? And we have been for several years?
That's the accumulation of well data, not these.
So this is 8th or 10th Street.
Right. And we do chloride testing on those quarterly. Mm-hmm. And so we track those.
So like right now, would we be above that or below that?
Oh, we're well below.
Well below. Okay.
I think at 8th, which is probably the most vulnerable, is in the 80 parts per million.
Okay. So basically we're going to change this climate trigger to be the rainfall totals or the BMC water level.
Correct.
And then the exit is going to be receive rainfall or.
Right.
Okay. Got it. That's the part that wasn't straight in my head.
Thank you for asking. And then financial penalties, which I think we need to leave in. But again, it really calls for what I'd call mandatory rationing allocations in 3, 4, and 5. And, back in 2015, it was a board decision not to implement those. And we've done very well without them, but I think we leave them in. But again, I just want to make it aware that that's going to be a board decision on when we make that jump, because it is going to be very staff intensive to do something like that.
But it's a tool to use if we get desperate.
Especially I'm thinking as we get to 4 or 5.
But I mean, everybody was conserving more than we expected. So
exactly. And that's been the whole philosophy that the community, our water service area especially, has responded so well. Why penalize when they're already doing it? So there's no changes there. And that's the end of my presentation.
I like that you looked over the contingency plan and simplified and pulled things out that didn't seem necessary. That's always good. And I like the idea of using measurable data, but I understand you not wanting to let go of the rainfall estimates right yet.
Eventually, I think we will. As soon as I'm more confident in the chloride, BMC chloride.
At least we have measurable data, so yeah. That's good. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions, comments from the board? Okay, with that, we'll go to public comment for agenda item 7A.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. There's no public comment online.
Okay, we have none in the boardroom. I appreciate your efforts on this, Ron. I know that it's always been kind of a confusing, hazy thing. And I remember the decision, we don't want to go to stage 5 from 0. That just seems like a knee-jerk reaction. This has been a twisty, windy road, but I think this is an improvement, and I will entertain a motion about this.
I will. Thank you, Ron, for putting this all together. It's a lot of work, and it all is going to be much better, and we're going to have better data to use for planning. So I move that the board conceptually approve the recommended changes to the water shortage contingency plan and direct staff to bring back an ordinance to amend Title II with the changes conceptually approved.
I'll second.
We just need a voice vote, don't we? Yes. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. That motion carries, and we'll move on to agenda item 7B, which is the review of the San Luis Obispo County Water Offset Program Study, finally.
Yes, and I want to emphasize that this is not an action item, that it's purely informational. And I'll talk a little bit when I get to the next steps on one our board may want to get more involved. But again, this was a study long time coming. It was commissioned back in 2022. The primary objective was to identify the remaining retrofit opportunities in the community after, you know, the prohibition zone retrofit. There's really some question about, well, what's really remaining and how do we do that? So it was, I applaud the county for moving forward with this study. And then part of that is to evaluate and quantify the water savings potential. And then the big one for the water purveyors were to look at any improvements that could be made to enhance the water offset program. We had quite a few concerns about how the program was being run, especially verifying water savings results and other things. Just a little bit of a summary about the program. Right now, the water offset program is only available to new development outside the prohibition zone. Water offset retrofits can come from existing development, and this is the odd one, inside or outside the prohibition zone with some limitations. The limitations are inside the prohibition zone, you can only retrofit high efficiency washing machines. So it's kind of an odd program right there. And that the offsets must achieve a 2-to-1 water savings. That means in theory, if your development was going to use a half acre of water, you'd have to do enough plumbing retrofits to equal twice that amount, 1 acre foot in simple terms. Some of the significant findings that I pulled from the report. And again, what I tried to do, there's so much data in this report, you could dive way down into it. So I tried to just pull out what I thought were the highlights. But I'm more than happy to answer any questions on any in particular if there's something deep down in there that you'd like to talk about. But they're saying there's approximately, though they use 879, 3.5 gallon per flush toilets remain outside the sewer area. That seems high, but that's, I do trust their consultant, Medalis Water Management. They're a good consultant. They've been around for many, many years, and I've worked with them over the years many times. There's approximately 479 remaining showerheads with a flow rate of 2.5 gallons per minute located outside the sewer area. And that there's been a significant number of high efficiency washing machines retrofitted, but there's approximately 2,150 remaining mainly in the sewer area. So just some interesting data. They did use all the data available from rebate programs, including ours, and then all the data during the prohibition zone retrofit.
So in theory, if people didn't use maybe they bought a high efficiency washer but didn't use a rebate program, they wouldn't know.
Right, exactly. So there are some assumptions definitely built in here. The conclusions were interesting that there's about 118 acre feet per year of water savings potential remaining. Of course, most of that's outdoor, 84 acre feet, and the other is 34 acre feet for outdoor. Indoor is 84. They did divide it off into purveyor, single family. This is one of the tables in the single family, multifamily. One's water purveyor customers, self-source are the well users outside, or urban users using wells outside of the purveyor service areas. You can see over on the far right there, the total average gallons per dwelling per day per dwelling for purveyor is 128 gallons. For the well or self-source is 390. There is a lot of great information in Appendix C that kind of looks at this and how they estimated all of it. So it's one of my things I encourage people, not only the board, but public to look at. And then, of course, for multifamily, it's a little closer, and that's mainly because, you know, apartments or, you know, duplexes, they're fairly similar. You just have the bigger properties out, mostly on the east side of town. And here's where they really got down into some specifics. On the indoor, I followed the methodology, and I agree that this is probably a good representation of what's out there in terms of acre feet by plumbing device. When they moved over to the outdoor, I was kind of thinking, well, this is more of, they just kind of decided to split it up the best they could. I don't know how they would have actually come up with some of that data, but I think it still is okay representation of how you could achieve savings in outdoor. I've been fairly adamant through this discussion with the county that I don't really wouldn't really want to see outdoor retrofits included in the offset program because of they're not reliable water savings with that. Things can change either by irrigation controller, you could add landscape, take away landscape. There's too many variables that are dependent on that parcel owner or occupant that could change that savings. Where on the toilets, shower heads, they're fairly hardwired in and they're more reliable. So that's something to keep in mind as we look at next steps. And then this breaks it out by water savings by purveyor. You can see there's a little more in Golden State's area, even though they're a little bit smaller than us, but that's because they have more area outside the prohibition zone that wasn't initially retrofitted. But again, I think this is a good representation of the potential within each water purveyor service area, including the ones private wells.
Is the private wells like an estimate?
It is an estimate, but I think they've done a fairly good job on doing how that estimate works because
they don't have meters, so we wouldn't know.
But they did a great job on using aerial photography and water use estimation based on landscape area. And again, this is in Appendix C. If you'd like to see how it's done, I agree with the methodology, and it's way better than what has been done. And then indoor is indoor. You know, they estimated there could be more higher gallonage toilets and shower heads, of course, out there. But I think it's a fairly good representation.
Okay, so they're saying that there's 118 acre feet a year potentially available. 84 of that's indoor. So at a 2-to-1, that's 42 acre feet a year, essentially buildable, is what they're saying.
That could be used for, you know, new construction, new development. And then what they'll do is they're going to be refining what an actual residential property, or all properties, but residential properties mainly, because that's what most of our infill is going to be. And then let's say it's 0.15 acre feet, let's say, you know, to build a house, you'd have to do 0.3 to get that 2-to-1. So then you could kind of start doing the math on how many actual dwelling units are available to be built. But that's still, they haven't come out with that revision yet, so we don't know exactly what that number is going to be.
And none of this retrofit opportunity applies to detached.
Like guest houses?
Guest houses. They don't fall under any of this because they're assumed not to have an increased water use.
Right. And, you know, that's been brought up because it's been so controversial. And the county's going to have to look at that to determine if they want to add, because, the hard part, you can understand a meter and how much, you know, what's behind that meter, and then everything's averaged. So, you know, you have 1-2-bedroom houses and you have 5-bedroom houses, but it's going to be an average. You know, guest houses have been something that's not typically individually metered. It's just like adding square footage basically to a house.
Right. That's why but there's no mechanism actually to even track what the impact of this additional development is going to be, because the county doesn't monitor water use. They would have to ask us for information about any particular property that had a permit issued. And
I think in order for the district to even consider the offset program, the verification program is going to have to be very robust, and it may involve us having to be more involved. All the purveyors.
That's kind of where I was going. It just seems like maybe a basin management committee issue that needs to be discussed.
Well, as you know, the basin management committee will get this presentation from the county. So I'm not sure how involved they're going to go, but it'll definitely encourage people to come to that meeting. So the basic recommendations made by the consultant, and again, remember, this is a consultant report that the county is going to take and decide what to do with, was update required water offsets for new residents. That's using, and basically they used our data the most because we were able to pull it and provide it, have it cleaned up. Thank you, Margaret. And it gave them better data than they were getting from Golden State, just the way their billing system is set up. So it's going to be based basically off our service area.
So that's like gallons per day per household.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Right.
Okay.
Or acre feet per year. That's probably what they'll come down to. You know, it'll kind of go, if for the offset program, they'll look at acre feet per year to get that 2-to-1 rate.
But it's still like acre feet a year per household.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. And they'll do it for multifamily, single family. Yeah. And I don't know how they're going to handle commercial yet.
Got it.
Update estimated plumbing fixtures, daily use rates. That goes back to, you know, flush gallons per flush, you know, gallons per minute for shower heads, et cetera. Allow additional indoor toilet and shower head retrofits within the prohibition zone. It's pretty much agreed that this should be community wide, that it really, to have separate requirements in parts of your community isn't really a functional way to
when
have
you
it.
Share one basin.
Exactly. They're saying include outdoor water conservation measures with sufficient verification of continued water savings. And I already made my opinion known on that one. And then just monitoring. My other, if you're wanting to kind of go to specific areas after reading it, I found the significant findings on page 26. It's a big laundry list. That's why I didn't want to try to list them here. The water savings verification, like I said, this is of most importance to the purveyors. There's some good information starting on page 27. And then Appendix C, that's the self-source parcels on page 43. So those are areas I'd recommend if people want to really see how the total picture and how it would be impacted by this might look. Next steps, the county staff is going to take it to the Board of Supervisors. They haven't come out with a schedule, but they say by the end of the year, but it's been very noncommittal right there. They will have to take a look at modifications to the growth management ordinance to incorporate any revised program that they come up with. This is a definite dialogue with the county and the Coastal Commission, because the Coastal is very interested in the outcome of this. And then they are going to the water purveyors provide input into the final program. And I think that was it.
But this is only affecting outside of the prohibition zone, right?
No, this is going to be for the whole community.
That was one of those recommendations?
Yes.
So that meant they're recommending applying that to everything?
Yes.
Whereas right now it only applies outside.
Exactly. And so where the big decision points for the board are going to be, okay, how, you know, new development based on the offset program in our water service area, is that a yes or a no? Golden State, according to the way they interpret their CPUC, Public Utilities Commission requirements, they have to serve if the county approves of an application or pushes an application through. So we need to look at equity and balance. And I believe, again, my opinion is if it's a solid offset program, I think we could allow some development within our water service area.
I didn't hear a timeline there. So we're talking about prior to basin management criteria being met. Where does that all fold into all of this? Hitting our water levels, our chloride targets, those criteria?
Well,
as long as we're making progress toward those, we're
right. And that's where the monitoring comes in. If we're seeing continued progress, because you have to understand there has been development in our community, and we're seeing continued progress. Now, that's where the first growth management, and this is in the growth management ordinance, it was a 1.3 percent growth rate. And I was recommending that we step it more slowly, even with offsets at maybe a 0.3, then a 0.5, and then maybe look at a 0.0 or a 1.0 at some point, over a 5 or so year period. So again, it's our responsibility to make sure we're not impacting the community and the groundwater basin in a negative way.
But the argument is that you're not using water out of the basin, you're saving it. You're saving it to use it, I guess, right? I mean, that's the point of the offset program. So if it's verified and we're monitoring it that, and it's true, then that would make sense.
Right.
Yes, I feel better about verification if even the detached guest house program had some way of verifying that they're not going to add water use. But I haven't seen that yet even. So this is interesting. Finally, it's here.
Yeah.
Finally, it's here. This is all.
So as I said, there's no decision points tonight.
Yeah.
This is purely informational. I just wanted to give a background. So when we get into future decisions, you'll have at least understood briefly or, you know, in context with what was being said in that study. So now it's up to the county where they take it and what that looks like, how we respond as purveyors and the BMC response.
Okay, anything else from the board tonight? With that, we'll go to public comment for agenda item 7B.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium.
We have comment here in the boardroom, so go ahead.
I wasn't able to attend the
utility. Richard, I'm really sorry. I don't think the microphone's on. If you could just wait 1 second.
You should know to just walk up there.
Okay, it's on now.
Yes.
Can you Thank restart you. The clock?
Yeah.
I have actually 20 minutes, but I'm only going to wait for you. I wasn't able to attend utilities because I was out of town, but I read the report. I think utilities needs to look at this again. Chuck has history, and I think Ron remembers how messed up the first one was in 2008 and the whole establishment stuff. Two things I just want to bring your attention. The 2.4 per household that they're using across, as far as persons per household that they're using across the board, that's inaccurate for multifamily. The mobile home parks, which is easily verifiable, I mean, extremely easily verifiable, is about 1.5 per household. All the mobile home parks have their own internal phone book, and you can, I did Moore Shores, and they had 83 of the 164 units were two-person households, 81 were one-person households, so 1.5. And most of the multifamily small units on the east side of town, some of those are only one person, you know, little apartments or, you know, the 500 square foot ones, most of those. Anyway, that's one thing. The statement on page 12, and it was on one of the slides that, and Ron kind of questioned this, 879 toilets remain outside the sewer service area with a flow rate of 3.5 or higher. I don't believe that's even close to accurate.
Said approximately 870.
Well, the reason is based on which of the reports you are relying on, either 11% or 13% of the households in Los Osos are outside the prohibition zone. This program has been going on since 2008. That's 15 years. Easy way to verify that is to go back and look at the number of sales in Los Osos that have occurred outside the prohibition zone, which is easy to obtain. Those all were required from that point forward, retrofit upon sale, which means they had to be at least 1.6. There's only so many homes outside the prohibition zone. Some of those have already been attacked for retrofit to build outside the prohibition zone on the 2-to-1. I think that numbers, there's a lot of things in here that I have questions. I only had 2 minutes. The other thing is the verification. And I know Ron and Chuck, probably the rest of the board agree with this. Remember what happened with Water Boys. Remember what happened with 528 flow, all of that. That's the big issue. That's one of the big issues for me. You got to be able to make sure that what is replaced is actually what's being replaced with the new toilet or shower head or aerator. So, I mean, washing machine.
There's a lot of information in that report. And yeah, it's going to take some time. Okay, any other public comment on agenda item 7B?
There is no public comment online.
Okay, with that, we will receive and file that report. And then we'll move on to agenda item 8, public comment for items not on the agenda. I think we have people here for that tonight. So do we have anyone? Go ahead, Laura.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium.
We have comments here in the boardroom, so go ahead. Give us your name and
Good evening. My name is Karen Kimura. I'm a 40-year resident of Los Osos, and I'm the president of the Los Osos Pickleball Community, also known as LOPC. The mission of the Los Osos Pickleball Community is to build significantly healthier, more vibrant and active communities by increasing involvement in the sport of pickleball through education, advocacy, and participation. We began as a group of 6 women playing pickleball in Morro Bay, wishing we could play in our own community to save both time and gas. The courts in Morro Bay are very popular and often very crowded. We observed the courts at the park and found them empty much of the time. We consulted with the County Parks and Recreation Department to find out if we were allowed to play pickleball on the courts. They said yes. We met with the tennis players to find out when they played and how we could work together to share the courts. LOPC incorporated earlier this year and in June received our nonprofit status. We now play 7 days a week, approximately 20 hours a week. We use sign-in sheets to track how many players play each month. We average 350 players per month and growing. Pickleball courts are smaller than tennis courts. This takes, we use our own nets and we have to set up our courts. We use a string and tape system to temporarily mark our courts. We use our own nets. This takes about 15 minutes per court to set up and 5 to 10 minutes to clean up. We usually set up 2 to 3 courts every day. This is about how much tape we use in a week, and we rewind and use the tape at least twice. It's a lot of tape. We've been doing this for 1.5 years. We've grown from 6 to over 100 players. We add new players weekly. We welcome everyone to give, and we give free beginner lessons. Our long-term goal is to eventually have our own pickleball courts. This is not possible due to the habitat conservation study. Our short-term goal is to have shadow lines painted on the existing courts so that we can fairly share the space. Shadow lines are the accepted solution until pickleball courts can be built. According to the Cal Poly report, Pickleball and Tennis in San Luis Obispo County, A Tale of Two Sports, which was published in 2022. LOPC will pay for the cost of the new lines, and we have the unanimous support of the County Parks and Recreation Commission, Supervisors Bruce Gibson and Don Ortiz Legg, support painting lines for pickleball. We need your help, and we're asking if the Los Osos CSD board would write a letter to the County Parks Director, Tanya Richardson, supporting the shared use of the Los Osos Community Parks courts by painting lines for pickleball. Do you have any questions? If not, thank you for your time.
I have one. I want clarification. I thought you said you had county support already.
We have support from the Parks and Recreation Commission.
And their, the local supervisors. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you need a letter to, you would like a letter to?
Tanya Richardson. She is the director of the Parks and Recreation. She's who's
final. Okay, okay. The department. Yeah. You've got the committee. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Hi, I'm Hi. Sandy Green, and I'm part of that group. I'm a 40-plus year resident of Los Osos, too, And I just wanted to give you a little LOPC update. Our attendance continues to increase each week. We see new families coming out, students, visitors, people from our community that come here for pickleball. And there was even a youth birthday party playing pickleball out there this last month. Each week, we have 3 to 5 new people join us from the community and also visitors. We welcome everyone, like Karen said, regardless of age or ability. Our youngest player is a teenager and our oldest is 94 plus years old. It's a game anyone can play. It's easy to learn and it has great benefits, not only recreational, but mental health also. We've met with the Morro Bay pickleball players and their courts are extremely impacted. You often wait 20 to 30 minutes for a court for one game. They also noticed that of their players, because they take attendance too, over 50 players live in Los Osos that play in Morro Bay. Why don't they play in Los Osos with us? That's a really good question. And one reason why is because they don't want to crawl around on the ground and put down strings and tape every single time we have to set up a court. Strings and tape are really hard to see, especially for a 94-year-old. It's hard for me to see the strings and the tape on the ground. We also want to reduce our carbon footprint and play in our local community. We pay taxes here and we want our own courts here to share with everyone. We need to look at the best use of our one park. We are asking for equal facilities. We set up our courts daily and it's unfair to the majority of the people using our parks. We need anyone at any time to have equal access to pickleball, not just when LOPC sets up courts. We are the only community in our county with a large and thriving pickleball community without shadow painted lines. We're asking for shadow painted lines so everyone has equal access all of the time, just like tennis has. There are shadow lines on all kinds of courts, basketball, volleyball, foosball, tennis, and pickleball can all share courts equally. We've been patient. And our group continues to grow and have a whole lot of fun. But we want to know, when will we have equal facilities? And what can we do to expedite this process? We've done all that's been asked of us by the county, and we have lots of community support. And we're asking you to help us unite our community, just like Bruce Gibson said. He's been trying for 40 years to unite this community, and we've done it over pickleball. We've provided a new exciting sport that provides exercise and fun. Please allow us the equal opportunities that other sports enjoy. Thank you. Questions? Comments?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other public comment?
Yuri Katayama, this is not about pickleball. I just wanted to find out if the board is considered applying for any of the Community Resilience Center grants being offered by the state of California.
We have not talked about that yet as a board. There is an emergency coalition meeting tentatively set, I think, for a week or two. That was the group set up post, you know, the incident up the hill, the Vista de Oro flooding. And one of the goals for that group being organized was to continue on with emergency preparedness. And so I think that's probably a place for that that grant to be discussed. Bob Newman and Andrea, we're going to try and get them. Well, Andrea's part of that committee. She spearheads it. And so we're going to try and get Bob involved and I think work through them.
I just wanted to mention the grants are coming up in less than a month.
Yes.
The deadlines. So for the initial applications, for sure.
We're aware of that.
Okay.
Thank you.
There is no public comment online.
Okay. One more here in-house.
Richard Margeson, just real quick, in case I'm not here at the next meeting. September 8th and 9th, the community center, Friday and Saturday is the people helping people, monster, fill the building, rummage sale. Friday 4 to 12 to 4, Saturday, 8 to 2. Household items, small furniture, everything you can think of. No clothing. We don't have any clothing, but it's one of our big fundraisers and helps fund our other things. So September 8th and 9th, Friday and Saturday. Hope to see you there. I know Chuck's going to help haul stuff on Thursday of that week.
Okay. If we have no other public comment at this time, we'll move on to administrative and committee reports, fire department report. Do we have Chief Province at all online? See him here.
He is not online.
I talked with him this afternoon and he said he was going to try to make it via Zoom. So obviously he got busy.
Okay. I hope it's something besides a fire.
Yes, mine is.
Okay, we'll move on to the Sheriff's Department report. Do we have Sergeant Coyos with us?
Yes, sir. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Elliot Coyos, Sergeant with the Coast Station here in Los Osos. So for the month of July, looks like Los Osos had 71 total calls, which is pretty much on par with this pace for last year. At the same time, we had 3 assault or battery calls, 53 general disturbance calls, 3 reports of burglary, 7 theft reports, 3 vandalisms, 0 mail thefts that were reported, 0 phone scams resulting in a loss, 20 suspicious circumstances, and 70 proactive enforcement stops, could be bicycle stops, pedestrian stops, obviously vehicle stops too, and then 27 preventative patrol activities, which could be extra patrols of certain areas at night, that kind of thing. And that's all I've got as far as our numbers go. Does anybody have questions?
Questions from the board? Not tonight. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care, everyone. Thanks.
You do the same. Okay. With that, we'll move on to the Highway Patrol. Captain Klingenberg, do we have him tonight?
I am here, sir.
Great. What do you have for us?
I have, for the month of July, we made one DUI arrest, not involving a collision. We made three DUI arrests that did involve a collision. All three of those were solo vehicle collisions. One was at Turie and South Bay. That was a motorcycle. Then we had one on Los Osos Valley Road, east of Fairchild Way. That was a solo vehicle collision that struck some roadway signs. Then we had another DUI collision where we arrested the driver, also a solo vehicle. Well, solo vehicle in the sense that it struck a parked motor vehicle. There was nobody else in the other vehicle. That occurred on 10th Street, north of San Ynez Avenue. For the collisions that did not involve DUI drivers, we had a total of 8. One of those was a serious injury collision that occurred on Los Osos Valley Road at Paradise Lane. And then we had 7 non-injury collisions, one of which was on 16th Street, north of Santa Isabel. Then we had one on 8th Street, south of El Moro. We had another non-injury collision on Santa Ynez, west of 11th Street. Another one at Los Osos Valley Road, west of 10th Street. Additional one, South Bay, 50 feet north of Los Olivos. And then the second to last one, Los Osos Valley Road, west of South Bay Boulevard. And then the final one on 9th Street, north of Los Osos Valley Road. So that was the overall picture of collisions and DUI arrests for the month, and I'm available for questions.
Any questions from the board?
I'll take this real quick opportunity. We got school starting again on the 17th.
Okay.
For the elementaries. Love to see you guys out there if possible that morning. Keep things calm along LVR and along 11th Street. And
okay. Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah, great. I appreciate the reminder. And yeah, we'll do what we can to get out there for sure.
Yeah, thank you.
And thanks for bringing that up, Matthew, for the community, everybody. That's just extra time to pay attention.
Yep.
8 o'clock's going to be busy.
Yes. I love seeing the bicycles go by in the morning. It's flashback. Okay. The utilities department report is in your packet. Ron, do you have anything with your general manager's report? You can fill us in on the utility department report and anything.
I just bring your attention to our CIP, the updates at the end of that report. We have 5 major projects going right now. That includes 2 that were lead agency for the BMC. So very active. It's going to be a busy, busy summer. It's going to spill into fall and probably the beginning of winter. The one I did want to point out is the water resiliency intertie project, which is going to tie into all the water discussions that we've had so far. The constraints analysis was completed. Nothing, no surprises there. SWCA, our environmental consultant, is moving forward, and they are working towards producing a mitigated negative declaration. And so that'll be the next step when the board sees that come forward. And then I'll have some more updates on that, hopefully, by the time that's done. If there's nothing, the 16th Street North tank, I just always want to say, if anyone's listening, it was up in the neighborhood, we apologize. We're going to try to make it as painful, least painful as possible. Sorry about that.
Yeah,
because we know what a disruption it is.
Well, the good news is we had 5 companies attend the pre-bid meeting.
Yeah, we had a very good attendance at
it. That's good.
I think we're going to get some good bids out of this and qualified bidders.
Good.
On my general manager's report, it's all emergency services related. There's, we have an RFP on the streets right now for a standard cover study. I've actually been getting some interest that closes on Monday the 14th. So I'm very curious to see what we come up with there. I put in a little blurb about my efforts with Cal Fire, County Fire, in terms of working through the audit. We have engaged Mr. Green in assisting me on that. Hopefully we can come to resolution fairly quickly, because that's been about 2 years now, I think, we've been working on that. And finally, I wanted to give a shout out to San Luis Ambulance Service. I think Chief Province and I had reported that we were having below or response times that weren't within contract, and and it was getting worse. After quite a few meetings and negotiations, they have now agreed to park an ambulance out here from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., which is our peak time of usage. They've rented an office over across from the Ale House, the Asian food market. So we really appreciate that, and it's going to be an additional service to our community, which was much needed. So I just wanted to make sure it was publicly acknowledged. And with that, I can answer any questions.
I had one quick question. Can you help jog our memory or my memory about the fire station and where we're at on that study? Because we had that initial piece, right?
Right. So I was waiting for the standard cover study to be completed, and that once we have the pieces on, we know what our condition assessment is of the building. We had 3 options, and that was more informational at that point. It will be coming back for some decision-making on that, but I wanted to fold that into a emergency services strategic plan based on the outcome of the standard recover study. So it'll be getting all the information we can, make sure we have all that before we start plotting out what we think our future, current and future financial needs will be to achieve everything in that plan.
Okay, perfect. And you said those bids, or the proposals, are due the 14th.
Yeah.
So next meeting, we should
next meeting about I'll hopefully be bringing something back if they look reasonable.
Perfect. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Ron. Chamber of Commerce report. Do we have anything from the chamber? Of course we do.
Now, just quickly, the Festival of Flavors event is still ongoing. There's another week to go. So if you're interested, go to the Chamber of Commerce website, or there's a lot of them for sale by various members of chamber throughout the community. That's it.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, LOCAC, we don't have anyone from LOCAC here. Troy, you attended for us. Anything that stood out to you that you want to share?
Yeah, I think the one interesting thing is the LVR corridor improvement planning that's going on. So there's, it's in the report a URL that the community can go and look at a satellite imagery of where they're planning on doing stuff and provide their own public comment there on suggestions like, hey, we'd like a sidewalk here, or hey, this crosswalk is dangerous, like we need something here. So the public can go on to that website and take a look at the improvement plan and make public comment there that the county will take in consideration.
So that's improvements possibly for LOVR from South Bay Boulevard to Monarch Grove, somewhere about there?
About there. The entire length? And then the Foothill intersection.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I understood that. And they're combining four different plans into one and doing that. So that would kind of... And then I also think from Palisades on to MDO, they reduced the speed limit from 40 to 35, and the Board of Supervisors approved that. I believe that it was that road intersection onwards, but I could get that wrong, but they did.
It wasn't that long ago that they bumped it to 40.
Yeah. So they lowered it to 35.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's see. Parks and Recreation, we did not have a meeting.
But we do have an upcoming meeting this month on August 15th, and I'd like to plug it a little bit because we're still working on, really the community's response and the community's needs for more facilities. We just heard that from Pickleball. We have a group that needs facilities. We don't have adequate facilities in Los Osos. So we're also getting input from youth sports. I'm sure we're going to hear from the tennis players very soon, and kind of have a couple of different near-term and longer-term strategies. The near-term is to work with those groups and the school district because those are our public facilities, and the longer-term is to look at the community plan and the park master plan and provide input to try to improve that over time.
You know, that kind of reminds me of the fact that we took public comment tonight and didn't really address their request. Is that something that Parks and Recreation Committee has been requested a letter, that something you've talked about?
We haven't. I think they wanted to be on the consent agenda, which doesn't provide a lot of discussion typically. And I know that there is a lot of discussion about that request in our community And I don't know if this is the forum to do that or if that really is at the county, because that's ultimately their decision whether or not they're painting lines or not.
I guess, I'm reluctant to wade into that fray without maybe some more background and knowing what's been going on at committee level.
Yeah, what I was going to say is that I'd like to see that as something that you guys discuss it further, because we obviously need the background. But I think that Parks and Rec, it's within their purview, so.
Yeah, and we're really trying to focus on not this group or that group, but
absolutely everything.
We need all of it.
Opportunities for everyone.
So that's kind of the focus.
Well, I just want them to let them know their voice was heard is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. That's
so. Yeah, that'll be August 15th. So
good.
It'll be a good meeting. Anybody's interested.
It is going to be a busy month meeting wise. We haven't last month, but it will be this month. Utility Advisory Committee, I think we pretty much heard the two items that were the big items that we talked about. There was no BMC meeting, so we talked about the water resiliency plan and then the Title 19 update. The Finance Advisory Committee report, what a professional looking agenda packet and report, and wow.
Yeah, good job, Ron. I want to welcome and thank, we have three new committee members, Chuck Cribbs, Gary Freeberg, and Lee Hood. I'm sure Lisa's very appreciative, so she can go on vacation without feeling guilty that we can't have a meeting. So I just want to thank the members of the community for stepping up and serving on the committee. And with our new members, we approve the meeting minutes going back to like January. So that was nice. We recommended the usual approval of the warrant register, receive and file the financials. And we had a really well done investment report. I think what Ron pointed out is a lot of the investments were made in June, but they didn't settle till July. So we'll get a more full picture the next time we have a report, either next month or I think quarterly is how often, but we did start investing the funds and making interest, which in this environment is really good. So this money we don't have to raise by raising rates, or money we can help pay for things we need. And so I thought that was really well done, and like to thank Ron for all his hard work on that, because that was quite a bit of research leading up to getting to the point where we are now, just making sure there's, you know, we are checking different avenues or different ways to do the investment.
And I'd like to thank Chris. She really assisted when we got down to the actual investment part.
I think this is a big step for the district. And I'm really happy that you took this on and appreciate it. Emergency services. So there will be a meeting on the 17th.
Yes, next Thursday.
Okay. So we know about the fire department building and the study coming up. So, okay, we'll have something next month then.
I was wrong. It's two weeks from today.
Yes. So that's going to be the busy week, right?
Right.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Okay, there was no Basin Management Committee meeting this month. As Ron mentioned, we will be talking about the Title 19 update. So I expect the next Basin Management Committee meeting to be exciting too. That's quite a week. Director's announcements of district community interest, reports on attendance at public meetings, training programs, conferences, and seminars. Anybody have anything interesting? Okay. Response to previously asked questions. I think we answer them pretty much as they come up.
Yes.
Except for shadow lines, and we're not ready to answer that one yet, I think. Tennis courts. Okay. Public comment for items on administrative committee reports and the consent agenda. Anyone want to pull anything from the consent agenda? Really only one unusual item, and that's the bid package for the well. And we certainly want that to move ahead. Okay, so public comment, please, for those items.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand, or please come up to the podium if you're in the boardroom. There is no public comment online.
Okay, and none in the boardroom either, so I will entertain that motion.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and move that the board go ahead and receive and file the administrative and committee reports and approve the consent agenda.
I will second your motion.
No resolutions. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Hey, future agenda items. I think the things that I want to talk about will go through the utility advisory committee. I still would like to see a verification program for the detached guest house issue. We're starting to loosen up the constraints a little bit, and we want to make sure that we step through this carefully. We've got a ways to go before criteria and the basin plan are met. That right there just leads to questions. So, at some point for the UAC, I think that'll be something we talk about. Anything else from anyone else? Closing board comments. What's coming up? There should be announcements and things happening. Is it summertime and it's just kind of low and dull, I guess? School starts.
It's the end of summer. Yeah. All the excitement was a month ago.
That's what happens when you get buried into house projects.
I'll just bring up Festival of Flavors is still ongoing. So if you're interested, it's very, very good deal for the money that you get. And you get extremely good food from a variety of different vendors.
Yeah, support your local restaurants. It kind of helps make it worth living here. Okay, with that, we will adjourn and see everyone in a month. Thanks, everyone.